We are joined right now by a senior writer for The Athletic. Previously covered baseball at the LA Times, also the Kansas City Star and the Star Ledger, co-host of Beyond the Scrum and Scribes of Summer podcasts, Andy McCullough is my guest. Andy, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself, Jim?
Good. All right, so let me ask you first about the Padres and the Dodgers. Going into that series, Andy, the big issue for San Diego, of course, was pitching. Mike Clevinger gets that start last night. He left two pitches into the second inning. Exactly how concerning is that if you're the Padres?
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning both in the sense of that they might lose the series to the Dodgers, but also that there might be significant damage to Mike Clevinger's elbow. And we don't know just yet the severity of what he's dealing with, but it's always a problem when you're hearing about, you know, elbow issues with guys. And he's someone who they didn't just acquire just for this year. I mean, part of the appeal with Clevinger is that he's a free agent after 2022. So it's a real bummer, you know, both for like fans of the Padres, really just fans of the sport who wanted to watch a really competitive series between these two teams. I think, you know, obviously San Diego still has a shot, but with Clevinger and Denelson Lamet not able to pitch, it just gives the Dodgers a pretty significant advantage moving forward.
Agreed. That was kind of a bum out last night watching that. So lay that out for me. The Padres then had to go with eight relievers last night. Like, so what are they doing going forward in the series, both in terms of starting pitching and their bullpen? I mean, can they keep throwing relievers out there and hope to outscore the Dodgers in this series?
Well, that's the only chance they have, really, you know. I mean, they're going to start Zach Davies most likely in game two. I don't believe they've even announced it yet, but Davies, you know, is a guy who was pretty good this year, you know, had good results against the Dodgers. I mean, Dave Roberts spoke very highly about just how frustrating it was to face him. So if you get a good outing from Zach Davies tonight, you know, you still have Emilio Pagan, you still have Drew Pomeranz and Trevor Rosenthal in the bullpen who didn't have to go. So, like, there's a path to victory, but it just gets more complicated because, you know, it's unclear who's going to go in game three. Chris Paddock has really struggled this year. You know, they've already moved Garrett Richards to the bullpen. It's very difficult to bullpen past a team like the Dodgers, whose lineup is so deep, you know, for three victories. That's just a really tough order.
Andy McCullough joining us. All right, Andy, what about that point? The Dodgers and their roster and how they're deep or how deep they are in their depth. I mean, how good is this Dodgers team? In your mind, how does it compare to the Dodger teams that have come before it?
I think it's up there with the 2017 team, who I think was the best of this sort of era, you know, this eight division titles sort of era. I think the 2017 team was probably the best. This group is still really, really good. I mean, the addition of Mookie Betts just sort of changes the calculus for their offense to a pretty significant degree. But, you know, I mean, like, frankly, when you watch them, it's not like they go out and just run people over every night. I mean, they didn't hit particularly well last night. You know, they weren't super successful with runners in scoring position. But when they were sort of granted an opportunity in the middle innings after Eric Hosmer made an error, all of a sudden they poured on five runs and their pitching was good enough to hang on. So, I mean, I think they're the best team in the sport this year. I think they're, you know, 1 through 28. They're really, really, really ferocious. And, you know, they have high-end talent. I mean, Corey Seager, Mookie Betts, Clayton Kershaw. I mean, they've got a lot of star power. So, yeah, they're the team to beat right now.
All right, so all that said, how much pressure then is there on them to win it all this year? For instance, is there less pressure because it's been such a weird season, or is the pressure even higher than it's been before because it has been 32 years since they're the last or since they last won it all, and they are, in fact, the best team in baseball this year?
You know, it's just so hard to say because, like, I can't really talk to these guys at the level that I used to be able to, you know? Like, I'm not in the bubble, so I'm not interacting with them face-to-face and having those conversations. I mean, my guess is that there's still a pretty significant amount of pressure with them. I mean, that's kind of what they vocalized in, like, the Zoom calls and stuff like that and the conversations I've had with guys. But, I mean, look, this is a team that's very, very internally motivated. You know, Justin Turner, Clayton Kershaw, Kenley Jansen, you know, they have been there for, you know, Turner came in 2014, but they've been there almost for the duration of this 8-year run. I mean, they very, very badly want to get over the hump. Mookie Betts very, very badly wants to win another title. So I think it's really coming from inside. I mean, yeah, you could maybe argue that, you know, because this year's so weird, the pressure's off, but I don't really think it works like that with a team like this. I mean, you know, they derive a lot of their motivation from inside their clubhouse rather than outside of it.
So, Andy, you mentioned Kershaw. Where do you come out on the postseason rap on Kershaw? Like, when you look back over the course of his career, in your opinion, how fair is that rap when you consider the bullpen support that he did not always get and some of the physical issues that he's dealt with?
I think it's fair to say that he has performed less, that not as well as he could have in the postseason. I think this idea that he, you know, is a bust or a bum or that he stinks in the postseason, I just think that kind of misses really the truth of the matter. I mean, there's almost like three separate phases of his postseason career. You know, there was that 2013 to 2016 phase where he was repeatedly used on short rest, where he was repeatedly extended into the seventh inning at times when he should have been replaced. And his, you know, record sort of bears the scars of that, you know. I think, you know, in 17, obviously, you know, his game one against the Houston Astros was one of the best World Series performances in recent memory. His game five was one of the worst. Well, what have we learned about the Houston Astros, you know, subsequently to that? And then I think the last 2 years, 2018 and 2019, he just physically was not at the same level that he was in recent years or, you know, before then, or even the level that he's at this year. And so I think it's totally fair to say, you know, look, Clayton Kershaw has not pitched as well in the postseason as he should have. I mean, he should have better results. But I think to just lay it all at his feet, say this guy's a choker, this guy, you know, can't handle it, that ignores, I mean, you know, half a dozen to maybe even 10, I'd have to look it up, like truly great postseason performances this guy has had, you know, when he was banged up, when he was on short rest. I mean, he's had a lot of great postseason performances. The problem is that the last one he usually has every year isn't good. And so you leave every year with a bad taste in your mouth. It's just, you know, it's a really complicated thing. I could talk about this probably for like 45 minutes.
Right.
There's so many different layers to it, you know.
So Andy, how does he look to you right now? You saw what he did against Milwaukee, punched out 13, 8 scoreless innings, was strong this season. How does he look to you right now?
Well, this is the best he's looked since probably 2016, I think, in terms of where his arsenal's at. Since really before he started injuring his back in the middle of 2016. That, you know, the fastball velocity is up. He has depth to the slider. The curveball is really good. He looked great against the Brewers. The Brewers stink. I mean, you know, it's really hard to judge that as, you know, an example of like, oh, this guy, you know, shook off his demons or whatever. It's like, no, he beat up on a team that stunk, and that's what he's supposed to do. So I think on the one hand, that's encouraging, but I think it's going to be a lot more representative how he performs against the Padres tonight, who is a much more dangerous lineup, you know, and offers a lot more threats than Milwaukee. But look, I mean, like, in terms of where he's at physically, this is the best I think he's looked in about 4 or 5 years.
Andy McCullough joining me for a few more moments. When you talk about that dangerous lineup, you've got Fernando Tatis, of course. He went 1-for-4 last night. Andy, he had 3 strikeouts. I mean, the guy's reached a level where a game like that is considered a disappointment. But you had this great piece in The Athletic the other day where you talked to James Shields, who was traded to the White Sox in that deal that brought Tatis to San Diego. People laugh about that trade because now it feels like a robbery. What about Shields? How does he feel about that trade?
I mean, I think James Shields has a good perspective on it. I think it's interesting how, like, certain players, like, you know, Dan Heron has, like, chosen to do this to himself almost. Like, certain players, like, try to Bob Uecker themselves, you know, where they, like, pretend their careers weren't as good as they were. Shields isn't exactly like that. You know, he was a really good pitcher for a really long time. And I think, like, he's kind of seen now as the guy who got traded for Fernando Tatis. And so I covered him in Kansas City and know him fairly well. And I just kind of was curious, like, what do you think about this? And he loves the guy. You know, he loves Tatis. He still lives in San Diego. He really enjoys watching the Padres. You know, it's, you know, he likes the all the things that we all like about Tatis, you know, the explosiveness with the bat, the ability to go the other way, the athleticism in the field, you know, the way the guy has fun when he plays. And so I just thought it'd be funny. You know, everyone's like kind of dunking on Shields about like this trade. I was like, well, what does James think about this? And he was pretty funny. You know, he thinks it's cool.
I think that's cool. And I think it's really cool that you mentioned Dan Heron because he lives down the street from me and I have not seen him since the pandemic started, Andy, but before that I would see him every day in the gym because we'd work out. We had a similar schedule. Like, what do you make of him as a guy and as a player? Because you're right. He's really funny like that in terms of self-deprecation. He's a tremendous guy. What are your thoughts on Heron?
Yeah, Dan is, he owes me a text back, actually, so hopefully he's listening.
Yeah, me too. I wouldn't take that personally, right?
No. I mean, I think, like, he's a guy who I never actually covered and only got to really know him after he retired, but we've talked a lot over the years about, you know, various stories. And I just think it's cool when guys who have spent a lot of time in the game kind of maintain their sense of humor, their sense of perspective, and, you know, want to kind of like, don't leave the, you know, the sport like bitter or, you know, like are able to kind of have just a, you know, are able to put the game in perspective in a way that has humor and sort of light to people who, you know, fans who really enjoy it. So, yeah, if he ever texts me back, you know, he's in my good book again.
No, I agree with you. He quote, he gets it. Like I said, I've not been to that gym in months, but I do see him at local parks once in a while. He's still getting his workouts in. If I do, I will see him and let him know that he owes you a text. Andy, great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much. Always good to talk to you.
No problem, Jim. Have a good one.
Andy McCullough writes for The Athletic.